they best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around.
Io's house in the middle of our street.
Io's house
in the middle of our.
Io's house.
It has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud.
Io's
mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
Isle's House episode season is over. Before we get into the most recent games, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter at Isle's House. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Jack at Isle's Den. Follow Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. No producer Greeny this week, but you could follow him at eGreenberg99. Subscribe where you get your favorite podcasts: iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Leave us a kind review if you enjoy the weekly podcasts. Some updates coming for you towards the end of the season, maybe after the season. There's certainly be more exciting than the team that we're watching. Jackie, updates, go ahead.
Well, guys, prepare for some pain as we go through our weekly recap. So when we last spoke, the Islanders had just gotten hosed in a home game against the Blue Jackets, which seems to have changed the season for the worse. So we'll get into it. Following up that heartbreaking loss, the Islanders hosted the Canucks. It was 2-1. We were leading in the second period. Vancouver ties the game, and it was Ratu. I honestly don't know how to pronounce his name.
Atu Ratu.
Like Nosferatu.
Of course he scores. And, you know, the game's tied 2-2. And then Derek Forbort with 20 seconds left in the period. This is where I decided that this is where I believe the true turning point is and where our season ended. Beat Sorokin. Terrible effort by Duclair on the play. Pretty much the whole line. Everyone just going through the motions. The Canucks end up closing this one out in regulation. Just a great way to troll the Islanders fan base in every way, shape, and form. Then the Islanders went to Tampa, and there was more trolling to be had on Saturday afternoon as it was 4-0 Tampa Bay going to the third period. And what do the Islanders do? They give you hope. They make it 4-3 with, I would say, around 8 minutes left in the game. And I thought when they made it 4-3, they lost the sense of urgency they had to get to 4-3. They didn't generate too much until Horvat was one-on-one with Johansson, the Lightning goalie, and he couldn't beat him with a backhander right into him. And that leads us to tonight, where it was Hogberg's time to shine, as Sorokin had been struggling pretty poorly of late, and Hogberg could not get the job done either. The Islanders give up 6 goals to the Hurricanes in a 6-4 final. I mean, honestly, I'm shocked. If you told me before this weekend they'd put up 7 goals against these two opponents, I would have been feeling pretty good. But ultimately, it wasn't enough, and they fell short. They've lost 5 straight games. They are now 3 points out of a playoff spot. They've lost their games in hand. Their schedule is ridiculous. The other team's schedules aren't. I think this season is over. Based on how they're playing, how the goalies are playing, I can't really see the positivity right now, which hurts. But, you know, it's going to be April 1st in 2 days, and I thought the games were going to start being pretty meaningless much earlier. So I appreciate the little run we had, but suddenly the Sabres are just 6 points behind us, and that is the last place team in the Eastern Conference. So for those who are looking to tank, it's your time to shine.
Well, not really, because Rocco may have the numbers, but I think at this point it's basically locked in that they're going to be picking between 7 and 10 in a week draft. So ripping off that 7-game win streak all for naught, because they're not going to make the playoffs, and they are also not going to have a top 5 pick unless the lottery gods bless them more than they've blessed us our entire lives. So things are looking bleak. Rocco.
Yeah. All good points by Jack. I mean, I just chalk it up to losing to better teams, right? I mean, Tampa's much better than them. Carolina's much better than them. And not only is it better at the top, they just have better depth. You know, Tampa can put in their backup goalie and have a decent enough performance to get a W. We just can't do these things. And I think this team that we were talking about a couple weeks ago, you know, after the deadline, lose comments and whatnot, lit a fire under their ass. That stuff runs out. Like, yeah, you could have a little magic here and there, but when the talent isn't really there and isn't really enough, you're only going to go so far. And I think that's what we have here. You know, you haven't had Barzell for a long, long stretch now. And we've seen that be key in games. There's been a number of games I've watched and I felt, you know what, if they had Barzell, maybe they would have had an extra point in the OT or an extra point here and there or whatever. But it's just, not only is it bad because they're losing, it's not even fun. Like, they're such a boring team. And I know that's the, like, league-wide common take about the Islanders, but I'm just having a hard time arguing it at this point because they are just kind of boring. Like, do you guys have fun watching this team lately?
No.
Do you, Jack?
The only time there's some enjoyment are when these defensemen that came over like 2 months ago are producing. Like, I do find that to be fun to watch. But other than that, I mean, we're watching second line JG Pageau, which is electric in a playoff series. But when it's game 70 and you need 2 points,
it's not electric, period.
Never
it's
electric.
Not electric. It's not ever electric.
It's electric when maybe when you're rebuilding and you got this cool veteran to help you out. But I don't
I'll
think
tell
it's
you. Duclair is not electric.
No. Duclair.
Right, what are we doing? Are we starting with the forward group here? Are we starting with the forward group?
Yeah, I'm going to quickly just touch on Jack's point about the quote-unquote tank in Buffalo. The thing with that is Buffalo is actually only the fifth pick right now because the bottom of the West is that bad. You have the Sharks, Blackhawks, Predators, and Kraken all below the Sabres. Sabres are fifth. Then you have the Flyers, Bruins, Penguins, Ducks, and then Islanders. And the Islanders have a couple points on the Ducks, multiple points on the other teams. So as Ethan said, basically it's going to maybe 7-8. The most likely pick at this present time is probably 9, 10, 11. I would say
probably. Fun question for you guys. Like, you know, the first team in the Eastern Conference, first team in the West, they win their conferences. I mean, we got to be doing the same thing for the draft. You win your worst in the conference and you pick either one or two. That's how it should go.
It is a total lottery. So, I mean, you're still, it's nice. Like, that'll be the most exciting thing, right? If we're in the bottom 10, we actually have something to watch lottery day.
Yeah, until the number 10 comes out for the Islanders, and then it'll be misery once again.
I will say, there's a few things I'm disappointed with down the stretch here. Like, after we traded Nelson, like, we needed some guys on our team that are still going to be here to step up. Sorokin did for a solid 7-8 games. Dobson did for maybe 4 or 5 games. Horvat, I actually think, still has. And I'm pretty encouraged by the fact that he's done okay without Barzell. So for next season, you could pencil him in as your second line center and Barzell as your first line center. I take that. I think that's a good thing. But some of these other guys, like Simon Holmstrom, had a chance to really solidify, like, comfort in this fan base in a top six role. And he has scored one goal in the last 13 games since the Brock Nelson trade that wasn't on an empty net. He has 1 point against a team that's not the San Jose Sharks. And it was an assist against the Flames. Like, I'm disappointed just because, I don't know, I thought, like, with a bigger role, he's been playing next to Horvat, who's been playing really well. You just think that he'd capitalize a little bit more. So a little bit disappointed with that. I mean, look, the guy's 24. He's not a huge
23.
Problem. 23. He's not a huge problem for our team, but I just wanted to feel like he really is ready for a first or second line role, which I just can't get there yet. I guess I want to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, the Simon Holmstrom hate is very much overblown. Simon Holmstrom statistically is the team's best penalty killer. He is excellent on the defensive side of the puck. We've seen that he has a plus shot. Year over year, he has improved his point totals. The problem with Simon Holmstrom, like many players who the Islanders have drafted over the last decade, is his foot speed. He is not a line driver like Matt Barzell is. He's not a line driver like Bo Horvat is or the much-discussed Mitch Marner is. Okay? He is an excellent role player, And for someone drafted as late in the first round as he was, you expect him to be a 50 to 60 point middle six player staple for your team, an affordable forward that you can depend on the PK. And that's exactly what he's turned into. The roster is dog shit. And I understand that he's been playing some minutes with Bo Horvat. But when the team offensively is rolling out two fourth lines, a third line, and then probably a second line. Palmieri hasn't really impressed me much down this stretch. And Rocco is shaking his head. I'm sure he'll touch on it. But this forward group is just not good. And even if you put a guy like Holmstrom with your best offensive players, one, it's not going to equate to offensive success for chemistry reasons. But two, when the opposing team only has to focus on maybe one line, yeah, you're going to see the production suffer there. So to me, it's like with the Patrick Waugh argument. It's like with the Ilya Sorokin argument. Like, there are plenty of other things that concern me way more than Simon Holmstrom's productivity down the stretch without Barzal, without Nelson, with a team that's rolling out JG Pedro as their second line center. Like, I'm sorry. If you're focusing on Simon Holmstrom, I think you're lost.
Yeah, I like Holmstrom overall, but I just kind of feel I take him for what he is. I think he's a third liner with second line upside at best, maybe. I think that's fair. But on the overall outlook of the team, and kind of to what Ethan said on Palmieri, I don't want to keep going back and keep going back, but it's just so frustrating to me that we just have basically the same cast. Like, I thought they should have broken it up more. I've spoken ad nauseum about it. And the fact that they're now, in all likelihood, not making the playoffs, it pisses me off more. Because what are we doing? And I know people, there was a whole topic on Twitter this week about Pajo and, oh, well, we can move him in the summer and whatever else. Like, yeah, sure, you always can. He's under contract. Obviously, you can move him in the summer. But the market for centers was booming at the deadline. Lou didn't want to eat money. Didn't happen, whatever. But the bottom line with this roster, for me, is I think it needs a lot of turnover. And the fact that it didn't begin, other than just trading Brock Nelson, frustrates me. You made a great trade in Brock. You didn't do much else. And now we're stuck with these guys that are kind of just whatever. And honestly, down the stretch, I don't think they're doing anything to help their trade value. These guys such as Pajot, Pulak, I mean, Mayfield barely even plays. Like, do these guys look better post-deadline than they did before? And Lou's stubbornness worries me, because he's the guy that's going to be here. And we discuss in the group chat all the time, it's not the type of team where, oh, you sign one player and then we're going to be good. We're not. Like, this might be a multiple-year thing. It really might. And that's what worries me the most, is because we really didn't kickstart it.
I mean, I see the path to being good quickly, but...
But what is it?
But it's perfection. It's a perfect offseason, which we haven't seen. Very hard. And it's hard to come by.
And I'll say this. You need luck with that, as you know, Ethan, as well.
A lot of luck. And too. I texted you guys in the group chat, and I'm dead serious. Barzal included. There is not a single player on this roster that I'm attached to. You could trade Barzal. You could trade Romanov. You could trade Horvat. I wouldn't bat an eye. Like, this is, it's not even a likable roster at this point.
It's not.
And Rocco, to your point, I know that there were some rumors about the Pajot return at the deadline. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but to me, there's two sides to the argument. There's, you're still in the hunt. You don't want to demoralize the locker room. You keep these guys, or you just rip the Band-Aid off and they are what they are. And they are what they are. And part of the equation when you're discussing trading or not trading these guys is, who else are you moving? The second they moved Brock, they should have moved Palmieri no matter what, because their line mates, you're without Barzal, you're basically banking on Palmieri to coast off of Horvat for the rest of the year for his production. Same thing with a guy like Holmstrom. Like, you trade Brock Nelson, you're moving him up in the lineup, and the production is just not going to be there. Mayfield, another guy that you mentioned, he's not even playing. How do you get rid of a contract like that in the offseason? So same thing with Pajot, right? You're going to elevate this guy into a role that he is not equipped for, and then you're going to go shop him with that recency bias attached to him. I don't get it. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, and I'll touch on the Pageau stuff quickly. And listen, people can believe me if they want. They don't have to believe me, whatever. I feel that my track record speaks for itself. Ethan's track record speaks for itself. And as Ethan knows, once you're a little bit removed from the deadline, the people you speak with kind of get more info as to what was offered and what could have been done and yada, yada. That's why, like, right after the deadline, I wasn't going, oh, this, that. But basically what I heard, and it wasn't a 25, but if Lou was willing to retain half, they could have got a one. And he just simply wasn't. And it wasn't a 25. It was later on. So I get it. A lot of people are in, you know, would say, oh, what are you trading for a middle schooler? This and that, yada, yada. But for me, if you get that value per Pageau, I don't care about the 2.5 for 1 year. Do it. Take it. They could have him for two playoff runs.
Especially if Richie's coming in as your three.
And you have the replacement. That's what bothered me the most. You made a great Brock trade. You had the replacement. Just make the trade. If he's not going to be here next year anyway, then the argument is, well, if they held on to his 2.5, they're limited in what they can do in the offseason. So we're now banking on the low, if we're being real, the low chance they could land a Marner or an Ehlers, and we're going to hold on to Pageau. It bothers me, and they should have done it. And you know what? If he could just get it all off the books and get a two or a three in the summer, whatever, I'll be over it. But watching this team play and how Pageau has performed and how Palmieri's another guy. He hasn't looked good. And if he loves it here so much, trade him and then re-sign him in the summer. Like, get assets. They should have stacked assets. And that's what bothers me, because we go into this offseason and it's great. We're excited to see Richie, but other than that, we have no clue. And we don't have added picks other than the one we got in the same Richie deal. They should have done more. They should have done more. They should have began the change. And it's stubbornness. And Lou's going to be here still, and we'll see what happens. But I'm really not a fan of having Lou be the one working the retool, because the reason he can't move half these guys is because of their trade protection. And guess who gave him that trade protection? Lou.
Well, he lost a lot of your guys' faith with the way he handled the deadline, because he wanted to. We all know his choice was to re-sign Nelson. And I think with both of you, you've actually backed him for, I don't know, the entirety of me knowing you guys. But once you guys found that out, that he really wanted to keep Brock and that Palmieri wasn't traded, I think he lost a lot of your guys' trust. But at this point, when push came to shove on Nelson, he knew he had to trade him. Like, I think when push comes to shove on Pageau, he will do it this offseason. But that being said, I do want to touch on a situation from Saturday. So the Islanders are down 4-3. Sorokin goes to the bench. Six skaters on the ice. Two defensemen are on the ice. Which two defensemen were on the ice, if you guys noticed?
I don't remember.
Tony D'Angelo and Adam Boqvist. And the reason why I think this is important is because the fact that you have Noah Dobson on the bench during this, I'm not calling out Patrick Waugh saying it's a bad decision at all. Dobson's been atrocious over the last few weeks, and maybe not few weeks, whenever the hell he started playing like garbage. Anyway, I just found that really interesting, because your season's on the line and you're going with them. You're not going with Dobson. Dobson is an RFA this season. I mean, I don't know. Do you guys think
How quickly we forget that Dobson was pulled from power play one last year for Mike Riley. I mean, the guy does not have the faith of his coaching staff. He certainly doesn't have the faith of a majority of the fan base. And I've said it so many times on this podcast. There is not a dollar amount in my eyes that he is worth. Goodbye.
Can we dive a little deeper into this decor? Because I think that's a huge, huge issue that not enough people discuss. Like, what does our six look like next year that would help the overall cause? Because
I'll tell you what, Pelech's gone.
You think Pelech's gone?
100% gone.
Because they are forced, because they can't move the other guys, basically.
Exactly.
Think Mayfield's gone? That's a major issue. I think Mayfield's gone.
Yeah, I think they're
both.
They're not playing him out of his contract.
Piss him off.
Yeah.
Which I'm shocked, because with Lou and his loyalty and whatnot, but I think that's more a Wah thing. I think Wah Waz like, I can't use this guy, so just scratch him. This way he gets the picture and we'll trade him in the offseason. And he's another one. There, I mean, granted, he might not waive. He does have a full move, but his value is going to be shot come the offseason. Like, what will you get for Mayfield? You'll be lucky to just get out of the deal. It's going to be one of those deals we're just hoping to get out of it. Question for you both. Sorry, Jack, to cut you off. But if you were offered right now, trade Mayfield just for future considerations, get him off the books, would you do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, yeah.
100%. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So if we're all willing to do that, his value might be zilch.
I mean, NHL GMs are dumb.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get a pick or whatever, but it's just the amount of years, man. Like, we've talked about it on here. That 2023 free agency when he signed, extended Mayfield 7, extended Engvall 7, extended Varley, like, how quickly that became ugly, man.
I really just can't get over it like that with Noah Dobson. I don't know what's going to happen with him this offseason. Like, when decisions are made like that, it's very telling as to, like, how much faith the staff has in him. And the fact that these guys made the decision to not put him out there with the season pretty much on the line, I don't think it's crazy to think again that he's not going to be on this team. I really don't think it's that crazy.
I think it depends what they would be offered, right? Like, and what the – There's so many layers to Dobson because it's what they would get in a trade, and also if they weren't to trade him, what his contract would look like.
It's just crazy because, like, so many people will be out there defending him. I've tried to, but when the coaching staff says, like, no, like, we don't want him out there in this situation that he's supposed to thrive in, it's just so telling.
Yeah, I agree. There's really not much to say. He's minus 12 in his last five games, six games. The guy is just looks lost is mean, but he plays in the defensive zone with zero confidence.
Zero.
It's a tough watch.
It's tough.
Yeah. But I don't find him at times in the offensive zone. He has this confidence, and then at other times, like,
just goes away.
Yeah, but not really. It's like once in a blue moon, twice this season, he's gone beneath the circle.
No, but right? That's what
and
I
how
mean.
Many times over the last five games have we seen Tony D just crash the net from the fucking blue line and it results in a positive play? Like, there's some guys who just go out there and they play with confidence and they get it and they have that instinct. Like, this sounds so dumb and it sounds so boomer of me because people are going to look at the analytics and say, well, that's not what the numbers say. But when you look at how Tony D plays, sorry, he's their best offensive D-man, and it's not even particularly close. He's much better than Dobson in every facet of the game.
Breakouts, quarterback in the power play.
Passing. Yeah.
It does come with mistakes, but honestly, this team needs him to try things because they're not going to score unless he tries to make some crazy pass through the neutral zone. It's just like what we rely on at this point.
Yeah, and it's a foreign concept to Islanders fans because until this season, they had a bunch of big, slow guys back there who weren't good puck movers. They haven't had a good puck mover really since Nick Leddy. And Patrick Waugh finally had enough, and he discovered, oh, the NHL meta is puck-moving defensemen. And what does he do? He scoops up Perunovic. He scoops up Boqvist. He goes and gets Tony from the KHL. And these guys are guys that can skate, and they can move the puck, and they can provide a little pop from the back end.
They are the most fun part of this team to watch right now, but we're going to have
to. That's bad.
That's bad. Yeah, it's bad, but we're going to talk about someone else here. And I'm actually bringing him up for the big picture, not for what he's done in the last few weeks. So I think if you asked us 2 months ago what was going to happen this offseason with Pierre Engvall, we would have 100% all bet that he's getting bought out somehow or somehow getting traded. He's not going to be on this team. Do we still feel that way?
Let me just say, with Pierre Springvall, what an absolute Patrick Waugh masterclass. It is very clear that he is broken through to this player with the numerous benchings and scratchings and sending him on the Bridgeport ferry. He is playing with confidence. Now, he hasn't been flawless. There have been a number of mistakes that he's made, but
we'll live with them.
Right. And I would say the skating's always been there, but the confidence in getting pucks to the net. And I've even seen him use his body a la Anders Lee to protect the puck going deep into the zone. It's been quite a revelation, I'll say that. And I think we brought it up, or you brought it up, Jack, last week or a couple weeks ago, maybe Pierre Engvall never having a two-goal game. And what happens
there
tonight?
He
there he is. So Pierre Springval is here. The flowers are blossoming. Pierre is blooming. And we just have to hope that it continues. Because I don't do, you know, I don't do Brocktobers. I don't do Springvals. I do 82-game players. And I do 16-game players if you're a playoff guy. But Pierre needs to keep this up for the rest of the year and into next year if he hopes to be on this roster in 25.
Well, do you think he will be?
If this keeps up, why not?
Yes or no?
Yes.
I'm going to go yes. And
it's insane.
The one thing, but here's my thing with it. It's not as much the play as it is if you buy him out, and yes, it'll be a small number down the road with the cap going up, but 10 years of 1.5 is a long, like this is Bobby Bonilla territory.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
And the other end of it with that is, so if you buy him out, you know, it's 1.5 for 10, but don't they save a good bit every time they send him down? Like, don't they save over
it's like
a
half.
Million?
Yeah.
So why like buy that. Him out? Just keep sending him down. I don't care if, I'm sorry, if you're not playing well, I don't care if you're miserable. Like, keep going down. We need the cap. Simple yeah. as that.
But also, he's a guy, still, even with his good play, I don't really care if he's on the roster next year or not. He doesn't move me.
But I also don't think that, like, say you do buy him out, like, for argument's sake, like, people are like, oh, it's only 1.5, but if you keep him and you just keep sending him down to Bridgeport, it's only 1 point, whatever. So just hold on to him and see if you could find something in him. I mean, if it's make or break, you need to buy him out to sign Marners or Ehlers. Yeah, buy him out. But I think there's many other guys with greater cap hits that you need to move to make this roster better. And as sad as it is, Pierre Engvall is kind of lower on that list than probably 5, 6 guys.
When, yeah, it's crazy. He was in the top three at one point, but like, dude,
he was just get him out of here.
Yeah, it's insane. I think you got to keep him because with the new, with the roster next season, I feel like this team once again will need wingers. So if he can play a third line role, I think it's really helpful. Maybe Richie's between Engvall and Paul Mary to start next year.
Oh, God, poor kid.
Yeah. I mean, not as much Paul Mary, but like Paul Mary would be fine. But again, it's another one like,
no, it's no thank you. I'm
just
done.
Just move him. Like, I don't – and I again, like, I know the argument at the time of the deadline was, oh, you're going to have a middle six guy for only 4.5. I'm at the point if he walked, I wouldn't be overly upset.
Like, me neither.
Because – and again, we're all – every time we all – because Ethan's done it, I've done it, a bunch of people have done it. You start crunching the numbers, you put in that 4.5 for Paul Mary. If you don't have that 4.5 and maybe you could plug a young player in there instead – suddenly you have a ton of room to play with again.
That's the thing, Rocco, and that brings me to my point, which is we Islanders fans do this a lot, and we've been guilty of it ourselves as well. When looking at what future rosters of this team look like, just sort of shrugging our shoulders and accepting, all right, like this guy will be here. All right, that guy will be here. And none of them are particularly good players, and we just pencil them in when it's like, okay, we just did it with Engvall, right? All right, he's tough to move. You could just waive him. Maybe he could
it's
play
a
third
season.
Line role.
No more penciling.
Paul Mary, all right, yeah, he's a vet. You could plug him in the middle six. It's like, okay, but one by one, these spots dry up, and you need a heavy infusion of talent. So, sayonara. Let's just try something else. Jack, I know you brought up Dobson. We spoke a little bit about the back end. There's probably some other players on the back end we should speak about. Ryan Pulock, cough, cough.
Yeah. I mean, with him, it's like, I personally, if it was up to me, I would actually wish he was traded before Mayfield because he's paid double the amount. And for what he has become, we've talked about it. He's become Scott Mayfield. He's not even as good at being Scott Mayfield as Scott Mayfield is. I'd just rather have Mayfield. Like, fuck it, dude. He's paid half the amount. And Pulock is so much more frustrating than Mayfield to me.
Yeah, I think of like if you were to go down the roster and grade your level of frustration with certain contracts, I think Pulock's at the top for me.
I think so too. And I hate that because I always was a fan. Like I was a defender and, you know, especially in the younger days, I always thought he had that offensive upside like everyone else did. And he's just like
big man, shoot hard.
And you know, this is a – I know Jack loves to do this with I had a talk with my dad, yada, yada. But like, I remember a couple years ago, I was watching a game with my dad. And my dad's like he's more of a soccer guy, obviously, but he's a pretty big hockey fan too. And we were just like talking about the team and whatever. And he's like, you know what it is with that Polak guy? I'm like, what? He goes, he's stiff. And I'm like, he's right. He's just like, he's not smooth. He's not this guy that's going to make this beautiful breakout pass. He's kind of just like this big, brolic dude. And he's just there. And like when he's going good in the defensive zone, he's fine. But he is just kind of like a stiff player. There's not much.
And he's got terrible veneers also.
Well, you're the veneer guy on the
I'm
pod,
the
so
veneer
I'll
guy. Listen,
trust you.
he's got bad veneers. But you're right. Listen, if you're not going to be scoring and you're not a plus passer and you're more of a traffic cone than you are a shutdown D-man, you don't have any value. And I mean,
Especially in today.
maybe to like a super dumb NHL GM, which there are a ton of, but the guy's still got a no move. And that's the biggest
Full.
problem. Full for another 2 seasons,
That's
I
the
believe.
thing. Like, we don't even have these guys on halves, bro. They're
No, and that's the
full.
problem. And
Scotty and Pulak are full, no moves.
that's why I said Pelech's gone next year because
I can see it.
he hasn't been great. I'd much rather move Pulak, but if you need to free up cap space and improve your back end as well, he's the easiest one to move of the guys that I want moved.
And think about it this way too, though. I'm not saying he's the greatest prospect, and I think he's gonna be a solid player, but think about it. Your one defensive prospect in the pipeline
George.
is a lefty, Isaiah George, that plays the same style as Pelech. So if you move, the argument could be, oh, if you move Pulak or Mayfield, you don't have anything in-house that could kind of come up in the next year or two and solve that problem where, how old's Pelech now? Early 30s? You
Yeah,
know,
something
you
like
could
that.
replace a 32, 33-year-old Pelech with a 24-year-old George, once he gets a little more seasoning. Because Pelech will
I
be
mean,
on.
forget about the seasoning. Let Patrick Waugh do the seasoning.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, I think by the 2 years down the road, I
I
think
get
Pelech
it.
will be a bit older, done, the injury history, whatever else. Isaiah George could very well be a better player by then.
It's possible. A
Yeah, I
lot
could
of
see it.
Trotz merchants on the back end.
Yes, a lot of Trotz merchants on the whole roster. Even, who we don't talk about too much on this pod too, and he just had like a bad season. Cizikas.
Yeah.
He is
Who would
not
have
good.
thought?
And
Who would
that's
have thought?
another vet. And that's
A
another
bottom
vet we
six
always
grinder who's
trusted
over the age of 30 having a fall off. Who would have
that we
thought?
signed to a long-term deal. But that's the thing. The philosophy of our GM is not the philosophy of the modern day GM, where you don't sign bottom six guys to long-term deals. You don't sign middle pair defensemen to long-term deals. You sign your core players to long-term deals, and you constantly, recycle around
Fill
them.
in the
Look
gaps.
what Tampa does. Look what the Avalanche have done. I mean, the Avalanche has struggled because they're a bit top heavy, but the top teams in the league do this. Vegas, they all do this because they have their core of four or five. You're on the long-term deals. Everyone else could go. That's
A
how it has to be
lot
in
of
a.
teams do this with goaltending too.
Yeah, in a hard cap world, it's how it has to be.
Should we touch on the goaltending?
Let's do it.
Jack?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the goaltending, I think it's really simple. The Islanders were getting good goaltending. They're in the playoff race. They're winning some games. They get average goaltending. They're getting points. They get bad goaltending. They're getting regulation losses at a regular clip. It just sucks because what Sorokin played, what, like 51 out of the last 58 games? Was that the stat?
Something like that. I mean, he's got 55 starts on the year, fresh off back surgery.
It's just frustrating because it's hard to pile on him. It is because he's done a lot this season coming off of back surgery, but man, you can't deny it. Like the last few games, that goal going into the second intermission against Vancouver, where Forsberg scored on him, that just took everything out of this team for the next like four periods, which is unacceptable. But I mean, to be fair, he gave up another shaky one like 30 seconds into the next period. They needed him to be stellar, and he wasn't. But is he to blame because he was rode so hard through the stretch from like January to April? I don't know. But at the end of the
But the thing
day,
is, though, he had January, right? Was his one excellent month.
It's so hard.
And he was good for that 7-game win streak. But like, again, I hate to rip on the guy because I think this year he was given a really unfair task, given the load that he was off the surgery that he had, with the roster in front of him the way that it was. But we're paying him a lot of money to be that guy.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's so hard.
And
yeah.
Okay, fuck you. Point to the Shesterkin contract. I get it. Shesterkin got $3 million more. He is a better goalie than Ilya Sorokin is. But even when the Rangers, who last year were power play merchants, like this is a guy that is elite consistently and you can rely on. And he's had a bit of a down year this year. The Rangers are not too great either. But when Sorokin can't be relied on in the playoffs and he's getting benched for Varlamov, and then to have some of the stretches that he's had this year, it sucks. It's brutal. And I remember coming on the podcast saying when Varley went down that this staff doesn't like Hogberg. Like, they would prefer not to play him when the Varley injury was initially going to be 3 weeks, that Ilya was going to start every single one of those games. And I think he did, except for maybe one. Like, the staff did not trust Hogberg. He's 30 years old. He is just he's a borderline NHL backup. So
he's an NHL starter, essentially.
Yeah, he's an AHL starter.
Yeah.
He's just not the guy. And I know earlier this season, you know, mentally I'm sort of penciling him in as the backup next year without Varley. But it can't happen. And especially if we're talking about getting rid of Mayfield and potentially trading Dobson and trading one of Pellick or Pulock. Yes, the hope is that you bring in guys who are better. But this team needs a lot. They need a stud on the offensive side. They need probably two or three new defensemen. They need a new backup goalie. And the cap still isn't particularly high. So when this goalie is getting paid 8.25, 8.5, whatever it is, I'm sorry, he's got to be elite fairly consistently. And it's really a tough situation to find a middle ground on, because I get it. He's playing an unconscionable workload this season because of Varley's injury, because Hogberg isn't good. And when you're a team that's constructed like the Islanders, okay, if you're going to allocate a large chunk of your cap to goaltending, you need that goaltending to step up and be elite when it matters, because the guys on your back end aren't particularly great. And there have been plenty of times where Dobson's fucked up, or Pelican Pulock or parking cones, and all right, man, like there's nothing you can do. But the guy's let in plenty of softies this year, and he did it in the playoffs last year, and he did it leading up to the playoffs last year. The guy's going to be like 30 years old. You know, he's not some kid anymore where we're like, oh, we love these flashes and we hope he finds some consistency. He can have those streaks where he's solid and he's letting in max 3 goals. I think Patrick Waugh even said it in the post game when talking to Hogberg, like maybe it was last game, maybe it was tonight, I forget. But he's saying, listen, you're not going to win many games when you're giving up more than 3 goals. And
yeah,
if you're
he did say that tonight.
And if you're letting in softies, or you're just getting beat clean, I don't care if they're good players, you're supposed to be a good goalie. It just can't happen. It can't happen. It's frustrating.
It's painful with it, because it's 2 seasons in a row where down the home stretch when they've needed goaltending, he hasn't been able to get it done for different reasons.
Is he just not a clutch guy?
It might be.
That's what the evidence is pointing me to.
It's possible he's a good someone tweeted this, and I'm going to say it. I wish I remembered who it was, because I'd love to give them credit, but I think it might be pretty accurate. He's a good goalie. He's not a money goalie.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing.
The difference with Shesterkin is he's both.
And here's the thing. You guys have made fun of me in the past for talking about Binnington. He's a money goalie. And
he's
I think that's
good, why. He's not a good goalie. He's a money goalie.
Yes, correct.
He's a money goalie. And like,
but he's
that
not
shit,
a good, he's not that good.
That shit means everything to me. When you don't show up in
but
these
you gotta,
big games.
But the thing is, Jack, with a money goalie, just to play devil's advocate with you here, like, yeah, you're a money goalie, so when you play for Team Canada, sure. And he had that run when St. Louis is good, but now St. Louis is just
good.
Okay.
They're good. They're good now.
They're hot. But Yeah, we'll see him in the playoffs. Maybe he'll play well, but like
Another way to put this, Rocco, is my good friend B Fitz. He always talks about 16 game players. You want 16 game players on your roster,
yes.
where come playoff time, these guys are fucking nails.
They don't have many
No.
anymore.
No,
That's
they're burnt
what
out.
I'm talking about with this roster. Like I brought up Cizikis before. Like I don't think he's that anymore. A lot of guys aren't that. And Sorokin, my one thing with him, and this is what I was about to say with Binnington, like when you're on a good team, they could kind of pick you up a little bit, and then you could
Agreed.
become that, right? Because they give you that leeway, that slack, where they're like, all right, you had a bad game, but we just picked you up, and then you're going to work your way through it, and you're going to become that. He doesn't have that benefit, unfortunately, because we're not that good. So when he doesn't have a good game against Carolina, we don't have the goal scorers to go down there, pick him up, and be like, hey, Ilya, rough game, shake it off. You're going to get the next one. And then he could lock in.
Agree.
Because I don't think it was the Reese, it was one of the playoff runs with Shesterkin. I think that first time they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, he had a bad first round, but they did enough to win and get to the next round. And then he was lights out the rest of the way. We've never, to defend Ilya, we've never done that for him. He needs to be
I
better.
agree.
He needs to be a money goaltender, but we also don't have the roster players that can carry him and get him through adversity. And we could say, hey, Ilya, shake it off. We're going to get in the next round. You get another go. He never gets another go. It's always, we're out because he sucked.
I agree because I want to see before like we before I come to a definitive conclusion on this guy, has he really played in front of a great behind a great team? He hasn't.
Never. And he wasn't, and you got to keep in mind, he was never, I could be wrong here, but I feel like he was never the true starter during a Trotz era team, unless maybe that COVID year. Was he? Was he ever the full-on starter under Trotz in a Trotz system?
No.
He wasn't, right? So like
Yes, he was the last season, but that season was
the
such a
COVID
disaster.
season.
Yeah, it was a
That's what I
disaster.
mean. I don't really count that season as one of the like prime Trotz seasons. So he like when we were at our best, we didn't he wasn't here. So he never got to show us. Like I almost wish again, it's a perfect world scenario, but if we had prime Ilya during those runs, maybe it's different.
Yeah,
But
but
our
again, like the
defensive
guy's
structure
getting.
changed, a lot of things changed. And I know I'm kind of drinking the Kool-Aid and defending him a little too much. I'm just saying Ilya hasn't been good, but we also don't have a team that picks him up.
No, but it's all right. Well, to take this in a slightly different direction, I think Jack, it was you reported a few games ago. Cal was on NHL Network doing an interview. Someone in the group chat said that prior to the game, Cal Clutterbuck was on NHL
Greeny.
Network. It was all right. Shout out Greeny, was on NHL Network doing an interview, and how he said that under, I forget if it was just Trotz or if it was Trotz and Lane.
Trots. Under trots.
So under Trotz.
Attention to detail.
Not even it wasn't even attention to detail. It was the team wants to play a more free style of game, which is basically less structure. And the only reason they were good with Trotz is because they stuck to the structure. So when you have a team of guys who want to play more free, but can't play more free because they're simply not good enough to play in that style, I'm curious, one, what that does to goaltender confidence. And then vice versa, if a team sees, all right, man, like the goalie is not locked in, I don't think he's going to be able to be the lockdown guy. What does that do to the group in front of you?
Well, do you guys remember that article that came out maybe like a year after Barry left? And they asked him why he played that sort of system with the Islanders. And he said, I thought we had some forwards who were maybe a little bit overrated and some defensemen that were maybe a bit underrated. And the issue with that statement is we still have mostly the same team of players he thought were maybe a little underrated on defense and overrated on offense, but we now have that team without his system. And I think that's our downfall. And it's, you see it. They just don't. I mean, the breakdowns they have now in the defensive zone, you never used to see under Trotz. And that was because they all bought into that system. But now it's just, you watch some games, it's like amateurish what goes on in the defensive zone.
Agreed. Agreed. It's all very, very frustrating to watch. All right. We touched on the goaltending. I don't know, Jack. I feel like you got some more takes you're trying to get off.
Honestly, you kind of touched on the Hogberg one where we agree. I mean, I think we need a different backup goalie here next year. I find it so funny that people are like, yeah, he's had a great season. He's look at the six games. Dude, are you kidding me? Should we just look at Engvall's last six games? Six games? Yeah, the last he just had two starts where he gave up 10 goals. He gave up four against Calgary. He gave up six here. He was another key for me. After the offseason, after the deadline happened, I wanted to see if this guy was a real backup goalie. He's played in two massive games and he's stunk up the joint in both of them. So no, he's not a backup goalie just because he had a few good starts. Like, come on, man. Like,
I'm sorry, Jack, to back up your point,
yeah.
they did not believe in him from the get-go.
And keep in mind,
Yes.
Varley that and also Varley has a couple years left on his deal. They weren't expecting, oh, we're gonna need Hogberg as the backup. Another example of that is this past draft, they drafted two goalies who I believe are a little bit of overagers in their drafts. So I think their plan was Varley could ride out the backup the next couple years. Hogberg's just gonna be the emergency third because we saw we had to use Appleby last year. And then maybe one of the Gamzin or Gidloff, is that their names? Like one of these guys could
Yeah.
develop and eventually become a backup. So I'm
I
with
do want
my
to
boy.
say,
What's that?
I do want to say something like when coaches make decisions of who's going into the lineup, like us fans, we always like to have our opinions, but like, dude, they see the guy at practice. There's things that they know that we don't. There is a reason why this guy played six games all season,
I
you
mean,
know?
think of the not goaltenders, but think of our prospects in the past we felt that way about. We used to complain, why doesn't Bellows get time? Why doesn't Bellows get time? This guy can't sniff an NHL roster now. Why
Why isn't
doesn't
Wallstrom
Wahlstrom
on
get
line one
time?
instead
Why
of
doesn't Wahlstrom get time?
Komarov?
Why can't Wahlstrom play? And then he can't even stop getting waived. I think he's been waived a couple times and no one's claiming
Yeah.
him anymore. It's like,
In some cases, I think that the contracts play a role. Like, I think Perunovic isn't playing because of contracts and they don't want to scratch a $6.5 million Pulak. But go on, though.
but yeah, and it's, I know it's not the be all end all, but I think it's also just that left side is a little crowded. And then you have Boqvist and D'Angelo as the puck movers on the right side. So as far as Perunovic, like now that Riley's back, unless you're going to put him on the right side, I wouldn't scratch any of those guys for Perunovic. But I mean, we're at the point where just give the guy a chance. Like
Yeah.
just scratch somebody else and give him a go.
You
Scratch
know what I
Riley for
love?
one game, whatever.
You know
But
what I love about Patrick Waugh? This guy, like, he's frustrated me at times this year, but he doesn't give a shit. He tells you exactly how he feels about any player on this roster
you know
based
why,
on
Jack?
the decisions he makes.
You know
It's
why,
great.
Jack? Because he could
Yeah.
talk the talk because he was a pretty good fucking player himself.
Yeah, he
So when he
was.
says it, it's a little bit different. Like, think about if you were a fringe guy on the roster and you gave a so-so effort. And then after the game, Patrick Waugh says, oh, like, what the fuck are you going to say to Patrick Waugh after that?
That's true.
Like, no, I'm good. He's going to be like, buddy, I know what was good. It was me. It's not you.
And
It's done.
because of that, he has a ton of equity in the media.
Absolutely.
So Patrick Waugh can do and say whatever the fuck he wants. No one's going to bat an eye.
It's fantastic,
And
though.
I like it.
I do too,
Me
because
too.
it's also pretty funny. Like that quote before Engvall turned into Springvall, where they were like, yeah, how you feeling about Pierre? It's like, like I just please not
That
now,
was
guys.
Winterval. You know what we're going to do? I'm going to have Tyler do a Pierre Springvall mixtape for TikTok where it's just going to be like, you know those captions, Jack Rocco. You're too old. You don't
No,
get
too
this.
old for TikTok.
It's just gonna be like, "Fuck it, Pierre Engvall mixtape," and it's just gonna
Yeah.
open with Patrick Waugh in the presser going,
That's good.
you guys are watching a meme in real time. And, all right, so it's gonna open with that, and then it's gonna cut to that song. Yo, Pierre, you want to go out here? And then it's
That's
gonna cut
so
to
good.
Engvall doing his thing. It's gonna be absolutely electric.
That's a
Yeah,
banger.
the six games of highlights of him doing his thing.
Yep, exactly.
It's all gonna be this. It's all gonna be from the same game.
Yeah, but just to put a finishing touch on the goaltending conversation, we've spoken about it, and I don't feel like it's being spoken too much about on Isles Twitter. But what happens to Varley is actually a massive part of next year's equation because that 2.75, either retiring or going on LTIR, or fuck it, maybe he heals and he's back. Like that is massive in what this team is going to be able to do in free agency because one. That's money that you have to account for. Two, you're going to need a legitimate replacement, and who knows how much that is going to cost them on an annual basis. You hope that it's going to be around the same, but Varley, a guy who didn't want to leave and who, I mean, honestly took a bit of a discount if you look at his production when healthy. Like, I don't know. You see teams pay minimum contracts to backups every year and come in and fine, they do well, and hopefully with Juan Greco coaching them up, like, you never know. But backup goalie is a big need, but that Varley cap hit, I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to watch them navigate it.
Well, it's going to be one of those things. Like, you can find a backup goalie that's solid for one and a half, but we also have to understand that the sacrifice of that is that backup goalie is just, it's just not going to be Varley. Like,
yeah, it's not going to be Varley, but also I think Islanders fans need to have a come to Jesus moment and realize
that's they don't okay.
Not even that that's okay. It's that, okay, we can't play Sorokin 50, 60 games a year. We need, it can't be a 1A, 1B, but like, it's got to be somewhat close to that, and it's got to be good value.
Yeah, a guy that you could truly trust for 20, 25, which let's be real, like,
it's got to be closer to 30 in my eyes.
Okay, fine, whatever the number is, but I'm just to defend my boy Jack here. It's not Hogberg.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's, you know, he had his little Linsanity run and that's it. And I didn't even realize until Jack said he's only played six games. It's crazy. It's crazy how we make this guy out to be like,
thank you,
a perfect backup when it's only been six games. I didn't realize it's that few.
No, it's insane. Like, he's not good.
He had the one really good game when Sorokin won it technically in OT. Like, that was his really good game.
That's when he got hurt.
When he broke his hand. And that was really it.
Put in the emergency. Who cares? Throw in the Zamboni driver.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys want to see from the next few games? You guys just like
lose out.
Just lose. Crazy.
It's sad to say, but yeah. I mean, it's not like we have young guys to watch. It's if we had a Cal Ritchie-esque guy and a couple others in the lineup, sure. But you know what I'll say I'd like to see is, I mean, again, as we just said, they know better than us, but maybe a call-up on the offensive end, maybe see someone new, some fresh blood.
I hope to see Perunovic, and I actually hope, like, in a weird way, I hope to see Hogberg. Like, just let Sorokin not play anymore. Like, it's done. Give him his rest. Agree?
Yeah, why not?
Not fully, but not.
It helps the tank.
They're going to ride him because they, you know, as long as they're mathematically in it, whatever. But like, yeah, I wouldn't mind doing every other because Sorokin has played so many. And you got to think about it too. Like, you've invested in this guy on an 8-year deal. If you're done, why continue burning him out? I know he's going to have the whole offseason and whatnot, but just give him, I agree with Jack, give him a little bit of a break. How many games are left? 9?
How long?
Is he 6-3 over the 9.
Is it a 6-year or 8-year?
He was signed to an 8-year. I don't know if this is the first or second year of it.
This is year 2.
This is year 2?
I think it's year 1.
So,
is it?
Because he signed the extension in when season.
He had a year left. He had a year left.
Yeah. So it was like, it became a 1+8 deal. So I don't know if it's year 2 of 8 or year 1 of 8.
Be nice to have a producer who's not in Nashville partying it up with Barry Trotz right now.
But what can we do? But yeah, we'll see how the rest of it goes.
His contract was signed July 1, 2023.
Great.
So if he had 1 year, there you go.
All right.
Should we wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up.
I think that does it. We'll do some questions next time. We'll get into the green room next time.
Wanted to rip it, get an episode out.
Yep.
And this team sucks. All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.